Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money on about the chilliest December day we've had so far. In the mid-teens now, temperature moving up a little bit in Park City. A bit of an inversion going into place in the Heber Valley where it's just 1 degree. So bundle up before you head out wherever you're going this morning. Good morning, it's Larry Warren, and this is Mountain Money, flying solo today, and have an interesting show. Our first guest, we're going to review the year in business with a bankruptcy attorney who's going to tell us who went broke and who's struggling these days in the United States. And there's a surprising trend involving the food industry. So we will be speaking with Chuck Tattlebaum, who will be joining us from Florida. And we pre-taped that interview with Alex Butwinski along for the ride. So Alex and I will be speaking with Chuck in just a moment. Then we're going to talk about a new coffee company in town and new in the United States. Campos Coffee is an Australian coffee company, and it is building its flagship store in Park City, their first beachhead in the United States. And we will have Will Young, the founder and president of Campos Coffee, and Damian Roche, a principal with Campos, and they will be along about 9:30. And then we're going to wrap up with Laura Kappas. And Laura has a new boutique in Prospector called Urban Renewal Boutique, specializing in consignment clothing, and we will learn about the consignment business and the kinds of goods you will find in her new boutique. So that's the lineup for Mountain Money today. We're looking for a high of 30, going to stay below freezing today. It's going to be good for the snowmaking, that's for sure. Tonight we'll have a low of about 17 degrees, a high of 36 tomorrow. A low of 13 tomorrow night with some snow likely, but not much accumulation. Don't get hopes up for a great powder day, but a little fresh dressing on the slopes should be coming in Tuesday night. Then sunny Wednesday and Thursday, and a little bit more snow coming in Thursday night and Friday. Well, that's the lineup for Mountain Money. When we come back, we're going to talk about bankruptcy in America after this.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, presenting Viridian, 21 new residences along the 11th fairway of the Canyons Golf Course with year-round amenities and gondola access. Summers on the fairway, winters on the slopes. More information at ViridianParkCity.com.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and I want to welcome our first guest, Chuck Tattlebaum. He's joining us from Fort Lauderdale, where he's a bankruptcy attorney with Tripp Scott, a law firm down there. And a little bit about Chuck. He's a founding member of the American Bankruptcy Institute. Represents Fortune 150 companies. He's been a consultant for 60 Minutes. Good Morning America. You may have heard him on All Things Considered or Morning Edition here on NPR. And specializes in bankruptcy and has for quite some time. Chuck has a long career in this field. Chuck, do you always represent creditors in bankruptcies?
I primarily do. On occasion, we'll represent business debtors that need reorganization, but most of my focus has been in creditor representation.
And the reason we gave you a call this morning is because you track trends, what's happening nationally, and this has been an interesting year. There are some very big names like Aeropostale and direct by Sports Authority, which has a big store that's now empty here in Park City. A lot of big names going bankrupt. What are some of the biggest names, and is there any one factor? Is it all because of Amazon and online purchasing?
Well, some of the big names, you've mentioned some of them. Nasty Gal, which is a mall retail chain for women. You said Aeropostale. You have Golfsmith, which was all over the country, retail and internet sale of golf equipment. Hancock Fabrics, which was a fabric chain all over the country, And as we speak, a company called Gracious Home, which is a high-end home furnishings chain in the New England and New York area, just filed bankruptcy this morning. So these are just some of the larger chains that have filed. And to answer the second question, while internet sales have played some role in it, it certainly is not the factor that has created the bankruptcy and the problems that the retailers are having today.
So are they all different factors? It seems like 2016 was just a boom year.
Well, I think there's several factors. One of them is there was a philosophy before the 2008 recession, which the 2008 recession, when it came out of it, really didn't change. For mall operators, it was what I call the Field of Dreams theory, which was if you build it, they will come. And we've had all over the country just a proliferation of malls that have been built or strip centers where you have the same retailers in virtually every one of them. And so, number one, you have a saturation of the market. And secondly, people now want to be entertained when they go to a shopping mall. The whole concept of just walking around a mall as something to do has really changed. So the malls that have put in ice skating rinks and have regular concerts and do things, and they've taken away the food court and put in better fine casual dining, or they have the dine-in movie theaters, those are the ones that are drawing more people. The other thing is you have malls and centers that are 15 to 20 years old, where the population demographics of those malls has changed, and the customer base on which the malls were based aren't there anymore. So you have all of these together, plus the fact, and I am not intending to be political in this statement, is that because of the middle class shrinking and people feeling more concerned about their money, there's much less shopping and much less casual dining going on. One other thing, if I could mention, which is an interesting statistic that was done on a study, is that Walmart has had a decrease in its sales volume. And what it found was that a lot of the decrease is due to the fact that the Walmart shoppers were moving to dollar stores. And the dollar stores now are the hottest growing, fastest growing area in retail today because the people are spending less and are not going to the big box, even to the Walmart, where they think they're getting a bargain.
Wow, it's just an amazing trend in terms of how we all look at shopping. And actually, one of the things we've talked about here as a sidebar to what we're actually talking about is looking at the notion of going back to town centers and live, work, play neighborhoods where people don't have to go to a mall to buy what they need. But that's another whole topic. I think Larry and I were both fascinated by the Sears, Kmart potential, I guess, for a bankruptcy in 2017. And that seemed a little convoluted to me that they seem to have an exit strategy to be able to do that. How does that work? It just seemed, I think one of the pieces I read was fraudulent conveyance. What is that about?
Well, what it is Sears has been on death knell for a year. And if its equity holder, Mr. Lampert, had not put in, I think he's put in something like $9 billion already to prop it up.
Ouch.
It would have been gone a long, long time ago. I think we're at the end of where he's going to do it. And what Sears has done, and others have done it too, is they spin off operations that are either profitable or standalone. Sears has spun off Craftsman Tools, which is a well-known thing for them, as well as their Kenmore operation and some of their other operations into a separate entity. They've also spun off all of their IT stuff. Now, that is to sort of insulate that operation in case the whole chain were to have to go into bankruptcy. That's all well and good, but if creditors are saying, wait a minute, you took all the cream off the top, and you've left us just with the retail that just is floundering and is not worth anything, if they do go into a bankruptcy proceeding, creditors can file what's called a fraudulent transfer action and say, wait a minute, you didn't get the value for this, because the value isn't just in the hard assets, you know, how many Craftsman tools are there or how many Kenmore washers are there. It's what is the cash flow potential from continuing to sell the Kenmore brand or the Craftsman brand. So the exit strategy is to sort of strip, and it's not unique to Sears and Kmart, is to strip the whole operation with the operations that may be either profitable or worth more, and then just leave the bare bones of the retail operation there for a possible bankruptcy proceeding.
Yeah, and you know, the Sears in Heber City, the neighboring town to Park City, is having a going out of business sale as we speak. So, yeah, dire times for Sears. Tell us, explain in layman's terms the different forms of bankruptcy, and are most of these retailers trying to reorganize under the bankruptcy law, or just plain go out of business?
Well, that's a very good question. Let me talk first about Chapter 11, which is the business reorganization chapter. Individuals who are very high net worth can use it as well. But let's talk about business.
Like Donald Trump, right? He's kind of a king of going bankrupt, extinguishing his debts, and coming out.
We try not to be political here, Chuck.
I heard a nasty rumor that his screensaver is "Oh, thank heaven for Chapter 11." but seriously, it is a tool that allows a business to reorganize. And one of the things it allows is especially valuable for retailers or any business, even casual dining, is it allows the Chapter 11 debtor to reject or get out of any lease or contract that is burdensome. So for many retailers, and in fact, when Kmart went into Chapter 11 the first time, they went and analyzed which stores were not making money. And what they do is they go to the landlords and say, we are going to walk away from this lease and leave you an empty store unless you cut our rent by 60% or 70%. So you have a choice. Do you want to have an empty store, or do you want to have a store with some minimal rent in it? And then what they do is they get out of leases that they can't renegotiate or they just think aren't worth it. And so they get a smaller operation. They consolidate what they're doing, and then they can pay off their creditors less than 100 cents on the dollar over a period of time and come out as a viable, or hopefully a viable, continuing entity. Now that's the theory. What has shaken up the whole retail, and it's really epitomized by Sports Authority, and if you remember a chain called Circuit City from a couple of years ago, that was a direct competitor of Best Buy. Both of those went into Chapter 11, and what they found out is no matter what they did, no matter how many leases they changed, no matter how many stores they closed, they still couldn't make money. They could not come up with a reorganization plan. And both of those chains, and some of the others we've talked about, Golfsmith is another one that's happened, they can't reorganize, which says something about the economy and everything else, even if they shrunk. So what they do under Chapter 11 is do a structured liquidation where they try to sell off stores to competitors, sell off any assets they can, and just get as much as they can. And that is what is effectively a reorganization by liquidation. So that's what happened with Sports Authority. Dick's Sporting Goods in the Northeast bought some of the stores. Golfsmith, there are a couple of that are being bought. And in Circuit City, no one bought any of them. So that's the Chapter 11. Chapter 7, which is the other chapter that your listeners will be interested in, is the pure liquidation chapter. That's usually used most for individuals, but even for businesses that we call are DOAs, dead on arrival, where there's no hope of a reorganization, that Chapter 7, they go there, a trustee is appointed, and there's just a prompt liquidation.
Well, the other thing that I found interesting, it's kind of old news now, and it seems to have worked, at least to someone who's watching on the outside, and it's totally different than some of the retailers we're talking about, is the city of Detroit. And from that, it seems like the judge who is going to be holding the hearings has a lot of power in what direction the potential for them to go bankrupt is. How does that work?
Well, the judge does. But in a municipal bankruptcy and also in business reorganizations, you have all these constituents that are fighting with one another. Let's take a retail chain. You have all the landlords. So they're in one group. And then you have the vendors that have sold goods that haven't been paid for. Now, that's another group. Then you have the employees, which may or may not be unionized. And if they're unionized, then the union employees are fighting also with the non-union employees. Then you have the banks that have lent money to them, and they're another group. And then you have the stockholders who are saying, wait a minute, we're going to be wiped out of here, which they usually are in all of these cases I was talking about. So you have all of these constituent groups, and another very bad analogy, if you ever watch National Geographic or PBS and they have all of these jungle animal shows that they have in the wild, you know, after the carcass is there, the hyenas are there to get what's left. And this is like the hyenas coming in, and so you need the bankruptcy judge as the referee of this whole thing to say, okay, I'm going to bring order to this. There's a structure under the law, and I'm not going to let one group who get more than another group if they're not entitled to it just because they may be bigger or have more lawyers or whatever.
Because you also have the issue of pension plans, right? And it's another whole, I think was Detroit was $3.5 billion underfunded, which that almost seems immoral. Maybe that doesn't come into the picture.
It is, but what's happened with municipalities, and Orange County, California went through it, and Allentown, Pennsylvania, and the county where Birmingham, Alabama is, have all gone through it recently with the same situation, where the legislatures, the city councils, the commissions, whatever they are, county commissioners, have been unwilling to bite the bullet and put more taxes to fund the shortfall in the pension. And so then you just get to the point where there's not enough cash left. And in Detroit, what they did is they did a balance. They cut some of the pensions. They changed the pension arrangement for new city employees. They changed the tax base. They did a whole lot of things. And the people who also got very hurt besides the pensioners is for years, people feel that municipal bonds are an excellent investment because they're tax-free. And, you know, a municipality is going to get paid full faith and credit of a county, a city, whatever, a water district, a bridge authority. And now these bondholders in these bankruptcy cases usually get totally wiped out. And those are usually people who are planning for or who have retired and are looking for the bond income to help them supplement their Social Security.
You know, there's another area that's quite surprising of an increase in bankruptcy filings, and that's just a tease. We'll get to that in a second. But I did want to stay on retail for a few more minutes. You talked about Circuit City going under and nobody wanting a single one of their stores to start up another business in. We look at Best Buy. And so do a lot of analysts, and it kind of has the nickname now of being Amazon's showroom. You go there and touch and feel the product, and then you go buy it at a cheaper price on Amazon. Does Best Buy have a future? They also have a big box here in the Park City area, and it doesn't seem very busy when I'm in there.
Well, and you're exactly right about what's happening. And, of course, they've just recently, Best Buy has recently adopted a strategy of you come into our store and you pick something, show us what they charge on Amazon, and we'll sell it to you for the same price. Now, that gets them a sale. But what's happening this year at Christmas is if you look at the TV ads everywhere in the country and even in areas like Park City, which may be – a little bit more affluent than some of the other metropolitan areas, you've got this deep, deep, deep discounting going on in order to generate sales. And that'll generate volume, but the margins are so thin. And in the electronic and the appliance area, the margins are thin to start with. So while Best Buy's new methodology of meeting prices may bring them the volume and save the sales, there's really a question if there's going to be enough margin to continue that. And to answer your ultimate question, they've got a real tough thing ahead of them, because other than their service business, like the Geek Squad and some of the other things you maybe can't get on Amazon, they have a real competition from the internet.
Yeah, you know, speaking of low margins, the other area that you say is now a trend in bankruptcy is fast food and fast casual. And I just know from the last couple of years, I try to stay away from those places, but maybe that's why they're in trouble, because there's more people like me. But I've noticed over the last couple of years, when I have gone in and needed something fast, they all have these value menus, and you can walk out well-fed, or fed as well as you can be fed at a fast food place.
In terms of quantity, but not in terms of health.
For like $2.50. And I kept thinking, how do they, if people gravitate to their value menus, how do these places make money? And it turns out in 2016, looking at bankruptcies, a lot of them no longer are. Talk about that.
Well, it is. I think there's several things, and you put your finger on it. There's several trends. One is people are looking to eat healthier, and you know, a number of states in New York City have now required the fat content and the calorie content to be put on everything on the menu. And when you see something, the new Super Big Mac, Triple Mac, whatever it's called, has enough calories and enough fat for an average man for 2 days, you may think about buying it again.
Yeah, think of Wendy's has a triple bacon cheeseburger.
Yeah, that actually, and when yeah. when there was a movie out a few years ago, Sundance movie, it was like Super Size Me, and I have not been in a McDonald's since I saw that movie.
So what's happening to the owners of those stores?
Well, that's the problem, because the franchisor, the McDonald's, the Burger Kings, the Wendy's, are dictating to the franchisees, you need to sell a Whopper at 99 cents, or you need to have a value meal at this. Well, different franchisees, they all have different rent, different issues. You know, on the West Coast, you have higher minimum wages than you may have on the East Coast. And the cost structure for these franchisees is really difficult. So when then you have people not eating out as much. And all the statistics show that people are not eating out as much because they're saving money or they don't have it. So if you take all of those together, what used to be thought of as gold mines, which were McDonald's, Burger King's, Wendy's, and things like that, they are now somewhat of a pit, because they have to have the value meal. The only thing they're making money on is the soft drinks. Everything else is really a lost leader to get you in there to hopefully buy more of the profitable items in addition to what's on the value meal.
Yeah, well, it's certainly depressing, I guess, for the franchisees. I wonder if some of the other ones, like the coffee people, have the same issue. But the other thing I was interested in, Chuck, was the situation. Again, it's kind of old news, and I think it's over, was the the Brooklyn Dodgers, to give you an idea of my age, but the Los Angeles Dodgers bankruptcy from, I don't know, it was probably 7-8 years ago, maybe. And that, what I was reading about, was the difference between secured and non-secured creditors. And apparently one high-profile person took a hit on that. How does that get adjudicated? And obviously there was a divorce involved in that, and it was messy. But what happened there?
Well, what a secured creditor is a creditor that lends money or extends credit. It can be for goods, where they get, if it's a real estate, they get a mortgage. And if it's personal property, which could be inventory, it could be a business, whatever, trademarks, trade names, you get what's called a security interest. And under the bankruptcy law and every state law, that secured creditors have to be paid first before any other group of creditors, but only up to the value of the collateral. And this is what happened, was a huge problem in Sports Authority. The same thing that happened with the Dodgers is that there were all these secured creditors that had millions and hundreds of millions of dollars of debt, but the value of the inventory was far less, and the value of the collateral for the baseball team was far, far less. So when it came time to make the distribution, they took this big haircut because you think the value of your collateral is going to save you, and it's not there.
Well, that's certainly, I'm sure that didn't work out really well for Manny Ramirez. I think he was one of the unsecured guys. And whether or not you believe that sports figures are underpaid or overpaid, he lost tens of millions of dollars, which
probably not a lot of sympathy for.
No, I was going to say it's probably not. It doesn't fit in the same category as grandma's bonds that are secured by a city.
Well, but that's a very important point you just raised, that you will have, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who are in the Park City area, either owning or vacationing, have a portfolio of different types of securitized debt. One of the interesting statistics that came out earlier this month was we have the highest default rate in auto loans that we've had in 7 years. And historically, people will pay every bill that they will pay every auto loans and let everything else go by the wayside because they know if they don't pay their auto loan, their car is going to be repossessed and they're not going to go to work. So the last bill that they don't pay is auto loans. And now we have the highest default rate in 7 or 8 years. So that also says something.
Yeah. One of the things that before we go, Chuck, or can I call you Chuckles? There was something else I read about you that I thought was very interesting that you've been engaged in since 2011, I think, in New York City. How did that come about? I think it was also an interesting joke you had, which the punchline I'll let you deliver was, what's the difference between a lawyer and a clown? And that was pretty funny.
Well, what happened was I've represented Macy's for 20 years, not as a debtor. When they have landlords or vendors that go bankrupt, and I was in the high school drama club and always liked to do comedy, and so I approached them about 8 years ago about how do I get into the parade as a clown, and they told me, well, first you have to graduate from an accredited clown school. So they helped us. My wife and I were enrolled in and graduated from Clown University in New York, which incidentally filed its own bankruptcy about 3 weeks ago. The Big Apple Circus in New York. But our degree is still good. You know, it's not like Trump University.
Yeah.
So then we passed the test to get into the parade. And for the last 7 years, I have been a clown in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And I do things for local hospitals and charitable groups here in South Florida.
Well, I presume there are many jokes there about a clown for a lawyer and a lawyer for a clown. But thanks so much for joining us, Chuck Tattlebaum, bankruptcy attorney with Tripp Scott in Fort Lauderdale and an observer of the national scene in terms of who's doing well and especially who's not. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Chuck.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And
I'm Beth Lohman from Park City Mountain and supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain's Epic Promise grants and donations focus on youth programs and environmental initiatives that impact our local communities. Grants fund programs that are designed to help kids achieve in the classroom and develop an interest for the outdoors by engaging guests, local communities, and our employees. Information at epicpromise.com.
This is Eric Lee, attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo. As a Park City resident for 20 years, I'm proud to support KPCW. Jones Waldo provides legal services to residents of Summit County in many areas. 435-200-0085. JonesWaldo.com.
Interesting take on who's doing not so well in today's economy. One thing that is burgeoning is the coffee business. There are all sorts of coffee shops popping up here and there. And at the base of Park City Mountain Resort, you may have noticed Campos Coffee has just opened. And this is an Australian-based company that is starting to expose people to their product in the U.S. and specifically in Park City. So in studio, we have Will Young, the founder and president of Campos Coffee, and Damian Roche, a principal with Camos. And this is a specialty coffee company from Australia, first store in Park City. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
Will, let's start with you. Talk a little bit about Campos, because it's a brand not familiar here yet. How do you differentiate yourself in the coffee field, and why Park City as a first beachhead in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, Campos Coffee is it's a purpose-driven brand, which is a big deal for us. We don't measure success by profit or revenue, although it does matter a lot. We measure success by the amount of good that we can do in the world. So we have a whole number of social projects overseas to which we donate to throughout Africa, South America, Indonesia. And these matter for us as a company. And I think us being a values-driven brand, it matches Park City. Park City is a very open society. They embrace different cultures, and also they're after companies that do good. They just appreciate them.
So how do you do good? Are you in the fields with the growers and trying to make their lives better and paying attention to how they grow the coffee that you consume?
Yeah, well, we give them a lot of money for their coffee, which helps them a lot. But also we pay top dollar for amazing coffee. But also we have projects like in Kenya, we'll invest money into a cooperative's equipment, and that equipment will change the quality of all the coffee being put through that cooperative. And the cooperative can be made up of up to, say, 2,000 farmers. So for those 2,000 farmers, they'll get a better price for their coffee, sometimes 3, 4, 5 times the price for their coffee. And that matters a lot when you're in Kenya. And if a farmer can go home with more money in his pocket, that helps him, and that helps his home life. So his entire family is taken care of. So say we're helping 8,000 farmers in Kenya. It helps all their families. So that's 40,000 people in Kenya. And that's just from a few, from a few donations towards upgrading equipment.
So you mentioned earlier that you have 4 locations in Australia and 4 cities. I presume you have more shops. Now you're here in Park City. How do you maintain? How do I know when I go to Perth, where you're going to be soon? How do I know that I'm going to get the coffee that I tasted in Park City and love so much?
Yeah, well, we do a lot of quality control diagnostics. There's a lot you can do now with computers and refractometers, even, that you can measure the actual taste of a coffee through numbers, even. And we can translate those over to our headquarters in Sydney, and we can actually find out exactly how the coffee is going through even numbers. But actually, one of the best ways we have of monitoring consistency is social media. Our customer base is so bought into what we're doing. We have a 99% customer retention rate in Australia. As soon as people enjoy working with us or enjoy drinking our coffee, they don't want to leave. So they become ambassadors for us, and they watch out for the brand for us. So we get all sorts of praise, and also the occasional comment that we need to pick up our game somewhere through social media. And we're looking forward to having that in Park City as well. I know there's a lot of Australians coming here for the winter, at least, for the amazing skiing. And I'm sure they'll be commenting a lot on how we're doing in Park City. And so we'll keep regular updates. Probably hourly, we get an email saying how our coffee is going.
So I presume you also then are roasting here in Salt Lake or up here. Or are you flying the stuff via 747 from from Australia?
Well, currently you're flying it in, via 747 from Australia.
Are you really?
Yes, yes.
Not the whole 747.
Not the whole 747.
Wow. No. But it has to be fresh. Coffee has to be fresh, so we can't send it by boat.
Well, I know that's kind of That's why I asked about roasting, and I never thought that 747 would be the answer. So.
No, but we will be roasting soon. We've found a very good location in Salt Lake City, which is an ideal place for us to start our roasting operation in the U.S., and it's from there that we'll be distributing throughout the U.S. as we continue to grow.
So, Damian, what is the strategy in the U.S.? You launch a new brand in the U.S. It's never been here before. You pick a corner location at a ski resort in Utah. What's the thought there?
Well, I was talking to Will about, you know, the opportunity in the U.S. and how specialty coffee is, you know, really starting to grow and what that would mean for Campos. And we sort of got talking around ski resorts being an ideal sort of testbed of distributed marketing. You've got a lot of young millennials who love authentic, real artisanal brands, working the lifts, working in the restaurants, skiing. And then you've got a lot of people flying in from across the country. So from the East and West Coast and all across the country, we're going to have people coming in and getting a chance to experience our brand. We sort of felt that if we went to the main cities, you know, they become very expensive real estate trades. We'd get somewhat lost in telling our story. But by starting in the ski fields and getting that distributed brand and then thinking about what other, you know, ski locations could we sort of head to, and it sort of links in with our brand of being authentic, and I think that's something that ski towns really are.
So you're starting in Park City, and then you'll move to other ski towns before you go in to try to roll it out nationally in big cities?
That's sort of our current thinking of the way we're going to proceed.
Okay. Is in the last segment, we talked to the bankruptcy attorney who said, you know, the fast food field is kind of shaking out now, and some of these companies are going broke, but you still see, I mean, I see a different coffee brand almost on every corner now in Park City. Is there still room for growth in the field?
I think there is, and I think if you're a company that's focused on quality and excellence and your customer, and that's your prime rationale of what you're aiming to deliver, is that excellent service, the excellent product, the best that you could possibly deliver, I think there is a marketplace. You know, we are not aiming to sell the 99-cent mill. We're aiming to sell an experience and give people a taste of what specialty coffee can be and what great coffee can be. And I think that's the secret of Campos, is, you know, our commitment and passion for excellence and the best experience.
So are you guys going to franchise your places? Are you going to keep them all as company stores or a mix? How does that business model work?
We'll likely do a mix, but we'd like to model a lot of what we do here based on the Australian model that we have, which is we have our own flagship stores, but then we take on business partners who have their own cafes, and we supply them with the coffee, but we also supply them with the training. We supply them with business systems, mentoring, and our goal is to bring on business partners who can then go on open their first shop and then their third, their fifth, their ninth. We've got partners back home in Australia who have 30 shops, and they start with one shop and, you know, a couple hundred grand, and that's all they started with 5 years ago. So we're quite interested in working, you know, very deeply with our partners to make sure they have a good coffee experience, but also a good business experience. We want them to flourish and make a good profit and make a good lifestyle for themselves, and also to represent our brands in the way that we need it to be represented.
So give us an idea of Campos in Australia. You know, are you the biggest? Are you on every corner? Just how big are you as a player in Australia?
Well, we believe we're probably the largest specialty coffee producer in Australia. We've got a very large footprint. You can find what we think is our best marketing is our Green Cup. You can find that Green Cup just about in every suburb. And if you go to the city, you'll find quite a few partners of ours selling the coffee. So yeah, we've got a good footprint there. And and we just felt that with this big wave of specialty coffee going on in the U.S., it now is a good time to get drawn into the U.S. market.
So in terms of the U.S. market, where are you exactly located at the resort?
So we're at up from the ice rink. When you come up the stairs from the ice rink, just on your left, up from the stairs.
And this is more than just a single coffee bar. I presume you have the space. I think you mentioned to us is fairly large. Is that true? And are you selling, you know, muffins to go with your coffee, or
so we've got a great range of pastries from some local bakeries. We're providing sandwiches, organic drinks, and we've got space to come in and sit. We've also got an Aussie snow beach. So we've got Adirondack chairs out on the beach on a beautiful sunny day. You can sit there drinking great coffee and take in the views of the mountain.
Koalas and kangaroos hopping about.
We haven't managed that yet.
Okay. Just what is it about drinking a cup of coffee that has caused it to become such a phenomenon since the first Starbucks rolled out? What is it about sitting and sipping coffee with other people in a setting?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite questions. What I see especially with specialty coffee, is you drink, you know, commercial grade quality coffee until you have that one specialty coffee that is so distinctly different than the bitter, you know, burnt tasting kind of overcooked, over extracted coffee that you might get, until you have that first specialty coffee kind of eureka epiphany moment. And then from that time forward, for me at least, and for people I talk to who have had that same experience, coffee becomes a real kind of special way to start the day. It's more of an experience than just chugging down something to help you wake up, you know, and that's what we like to be involved with, is changing that part of people's days to make it not just a thing that you drink that's hot, that wakes you up, but a thing that you drink that it's like a gift to yourself. It's like this meaningful thing that you can give to yourself once a day and that you enjoy. And if you can enjoy it with people, even better. And mostly when you have coffee with your friends or with strangers and you start talking, it's a really good experience. And wow, it's only 5-10 minutes of a day in this crazy, crazy world where everything's all internet and, you know, crazy traffic, trying to, you know, it's all very busy.
It's a pause.
It is.
In the day.
Yeah.
Just to enjoy a flavor.
Yeah.
A taste.
Yeah. Just to enjoy a flavor and a thing you're going to do anyway. You're going to drink coffee anyway. Why not make it meaningful for 10 minutes rather than make it just this thing that's just going to happen anyway.
Right. Well said. Well, thanks for joining us. We've been joined by Will Young, founder and president of Campos Coffee, and Damian Roche, also associated with Campos, opening their first store, now open, at the base of Park City Mountain Resort. When we come back, we'll be talking about the new clothing boutique in Prospector called Urban Renewal Boutique. We'll talk about that after this.
Gordo here, and I'm Larry with All Resort Group, a proud sponsor of KPCW. We provide transportation to the airport, Park City, and Deer Valley, utilizing private black cars, SUVs, and shared ride van service. Reservations at allresort.com or 649-3999. We move people.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of contemporary and mountain modern home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake and offer complete design services. We are on the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and we have in the studio now Laura Kappas, and she is opening the Urban Renewal Boutique, specializing in consignment clothing in Prospector. Get real close to the mic, Laura, and tell us about when did you open the business and what's your specialty?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I opened the end of August, and I specialize in designer brands, both individually consigned and then also through local retailers. And then I also have closeouts from sample sales in New York. So those are discounted but new pieces.
Okay, so it's the higher end of the clothing market, and is it women's clothing only?
Yes, it is women's clothing. But I also specialize in with local retailers that need to move inventory from a previous season or that they have overstock. So basically, the specialty is offering people individual, both individual and retailers, an opportunity to move product and shop sustainably. So higher brands like Prada and Gucci and Louis Vuitton, but then also some more casual, just basic lifestyle brands like Rag & Bone, Free People. But essentially, I got it started because I've had a passion for fashion for years. And prior to moving here almost 16 years ago, I worked for Gap Corporate in San Francisco. And always, you know, love styling people. So after, the last 3 years, I had a yoga line that I resourced from Bali. And in doing so, had a great experience meeting more people and doing trade shows. But I really have always shopped consignment because I never like paying full price for great things. But and so in opening this shop, one of the key features of my boutique is I found software that it tracks all the consigners, both individuals and then the retailers. So people can check their balance, their inventory, and their payout. Because if people are consigning, you know, a very expensive handbag, and they don't want to donate it, but they want to, you know, recycle it. They want to know what it went for, what its price. So I do all fair benchmarking prices from different online consigners and retailers. And so they can log in with their email, set up a password. So just by going into Google, a browser, they can check, oh, here are my 10 items. This is what their price, this is what's sold, and this is what my payout is. So they can, let's say, oh, they earned $150. They can come in and get a check, or they can use it as in-store credit.
You want them to take something else out.
Oh, yeah, and they get 10% off when they do that. But, we're located in a really unique spot, which actually was a bit of an experiment because we're in studio salons where there's several women business owners who are hairstylists, estheticians, there's a tanning. But I have a constant flow of women either waiting for their appointment or actually they come in with their hair and foil
okay.
and shop. But it's just an ideal location to have a constant flow of
traffic. Where is it? What's the location?
Oh, so
what's it near?
It's right next to Fuego in the building.
Near the old liquor store.
Yes. So it's 2015 Sidewinder inside the building of Studio Salons. And I'm Studio 109. It's a small space, but I pack a lot of good stuff in there.
It sounds like you've accomplished quite a lot in a short time since August. So the typical question is, you know, what brought you, were you here in Park City and decided to do this? Or you said, you know, I could really pick up a good market in Park City and I think I'll move there and start my business?
No, I've been here for almost 16 years. And I moved here from San Francisco. And then once I became a single mom, like 3 years ago, almost four years ago, I had to have the flexibility of taking care of my kids. So that's when I became a distributor for this yoga apparel line, and which is still, I offer that in my store, Satya Apparel, but I needed something more sustainable. So I've been a longtime consigner, and I really wanted to do it right, where the key is having really great customer service and being able to, with the software, let people see what they're selling and getting a great payback. So,
okay, real quickly, you brought a couple of examples. Just give us one example of something that's in the store and what kind of a deal it represents over buying it off the rack in New York or Salt Lake.
Make sure you hold it up to the mic.
Okay, can everybody see it? So one of my sample sales was with a gentleman, Cocoon Cashmere in New York. And so he does not have any distribution here. And so I'm part of this membership that I get alerts of what sample sales are going on in New York. So I reached out to him. We started with 7 pieces. He does high-end, really beautiful cashmere sweaters, wraps, and scarves. So this one in particular, this beautiful gray wrap with the fringe, would go for $520 in New York, and I can sell it for $220. So all of it's like 50% off, and that's just how he and I, it's a win-win for everybody, for him, for me, for the customers, because they're getting very high-end pieces for half off. So in my store, it's not just your typical consignment. It's also new and gently used.
Okay, very fine. The store is Urban Renewal. It's in Prospector. The address on Sidewinder
is 2015.
2015 Sidewinder Inside, with several other women-oriented businesses. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. And happy holidays.
Yes, and to you too. And we will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Park City Bike Demos, Kearns Boulevard next to Adolph's, parkcitybikedemos.com. Long, Reimer, Weininger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
And we want to thank our guests, Chuck Tattelbaum, the bankruptcy attorney and clown who spoke about companies going under in 2016. We want to thank Will Young and Damian Roche, the Aussies who are bringing Campos Coffee to the U.S. and to Park City, and Laura Kappas opening the Urban Renewal Boutique in Prospector.
Yes, and thanks to our great sponsors for Mountain Money, Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, All Resort Group, Park City Mountain, and Apex Residences and Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties. And Alex, it was interesting to hear that in the business world, some of the fast food franchises are struggling now. I hate to wish ill on anyone, but I think it's kind of refreshing that people are finally turning away a little bit from those kind of diets.
Yeah, certainly from the health aspect, it's nice to know we're all getting a little healthier. And hopefully our smaller guests this morning won't have that problem.
Indeed. So our temperature now is 17 degrees, chillier in the Heber Valley. It's usually the reverse, but a bit of an inversion going on in Heber. Headed to a high of 30 under just relentlessly sunny skies. It's just beautiful out there with the fresh snow. I was out skiing yesterday, and snow conditions are marvelous, and most of all the mountains are now open. There's a lot of terrain out there, and the coverage is very good.
Yeah, it was quite enjoyable getting out on skis for the first time for me.
And people are starting to roll into town. You can notice an uptick in traffic and such.
And speak to that firsthand this morning.
Yeah. Alex was trapped in a traffic jam this morning getting in. Not so much a traffic jam, but a little fender bender. Involving you.
No, thankfully, it wasn't involving me.
Very good. Well, heading to a high of 30 today, low of 17 tonight, high of 36 tomorrow. It's going to be sunny today, partly cloudy tomorrow, little bit of snow, just expecting about an inch tomorrow night. Clear again then on Wednesday, a little bit more snow brushing by Thursday night. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Been an interesting conversation this morning. As always, this is KPCW Park City.